This is Bitcoin Consciousness Podcast. Could we dive into your spiritual path as a start here? When did it start? How did it start? And how has it come to be intertwined with Bitcoin?
Well, so since I was young, I was kind of very much interested in kind of philosophical questions, you know, why we are here, who am I, you know, what's the purpose of life, you know, all of that kind of spiritual, philosophical questions, I guess. And I felt throughout my life for a long time, actually, I felt there's something wrong with the world, you know, and like the film, The Matrix, you know, when Morpheus tells Neo, that, you know, there's something, this sense of something, there's something wrong with the world, and it's like the splinter in your mind, you know, you cannot get rid of, right? So I had that kind of feeling of, you know, there something is not working in this world, and yet I quite couldn't point the finger at it, you know, cannot quite understand how wrong it is, you know, why you know, the world is the way, our society is the way it is. And but mainly I felt like, you know, that the way our society defines human conditions to be devoid of spirituality, devoid of understanding of ourselves as a divine beings. And then I felt like human beings are reduced into like animalistic state of being. And I always felt that, you know, we are much more than this. We are powerful, creative beings. And that, you know, I just was so frustrated in a way that I felt like everyone is made to live in a limited state of consciousness. Yet at the same time, I couldn't understand why this is the case, right, for a long time. And so before I found Bitcoin, I was kind of trying to find a way to, you know, unleash maybe our human potential, you know, for us to claim our own power, ourselves as a creative beings. And so that kind of led me to study psychology in an official capacity. You know, I went into university and then studied philosophy and psychology intensively to really understand or to get a picture of who we are as human beings, you know. And then somehow wanted to contribute to creating a society that is more humane, that incorporates ourselves as a spiritual beings. So when I found Bitcoin, when Bitcoin came to my life, I recognized that the potential of Bitcoin in emancipating humanity from this slave-like, you know, mentality, this kind of, you know, fiat matrix control system that oppresses our full potential. I see Bitcoin as a fundamentally a tool for empowerment, for us to use it to, you know, wake up to who we really are, and then use it as a tool to build a new civilization that allow us to express our creative power, I guess. So yeah, so that's kind of like my spiritual pursuit, or the search for truth, the efforts to claim our full creative power, I guess, led me to Bitcoin.
Okay, so you said you were curious as a child and then continued to be curious. And you said that you then studied psychology and philosophy because of this, because you couldn't understand how society could be so limited. And did you have any spiritual experiences, like direct experiences of the supernatural?
Yes. So that was, you know, I was born and grew up in Japan. So, you know, I identify myself with, you know, myself as Japanese woman, you know, what society defines me, right? How I'm perceived by people around me, you know? So that's tied to the sensory perception, right? So people look at me as a Japanese woman. And then when I'm living in Japan, I'm surrounded by Japanese people, you know, who look like me, who act like me, who are culturally conditioned to be, to act in a certain way, right? And then of course I'm defined by that external conditioning, or, you know, how I am seen by the other person. Mm-hmm. So I lived my life, you know, thinking that I am this body. I am female. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm not female, you know, but I am much more than that, right? That I am, but I'm identifying myself with that, you know, perception, you know, that come from the outside, you know. And then I got this major kind of spiritual epiphany or awakening or whatever, you know, one would call, that completely shattered that perception about myself, the identification of myself as, you know, identifying myself with this body and then everything. And I woke up to the fact that, you know, I am not Nozomi. I mean, I am Nozomi, but I am not Japanese. I'm not, you know, woman. I am much beyond that. You know, there's this larger identity, you know. So that changed my life completely. And it took a while for me to process what has happened and, you know, but to only to realize that that kind of a spiritual awakening or shift in my identity was just the beginning, you know. When that happened, I felt like this is the end, you know, my ego died, you know, and I attained something that maybe I was looking for. But it was just the beginning, because now I need to embody the state of being into myself in this physical world, you know, and direct, I guess, my define or direct or participate in the process of defining who I am in this limited time and space as, you know, as Nozomi, you know, the person, the individual named Nozomi, you know, who that person is. That was, yeah, a major change, certainly, and important one for me.
Yes. So this is what we call spiritual awakening. And then it can be really messy at the beginning, because everything you thought about the world, everything you thought about yourself, right. It's just sort of smashed to pieces, and you have to...
Exactly. And that's similar to, you know, Bitcoin rabbit hole experience that, you know, people are now having, and, you know, they share their experience, right? Like how everything goes upside down and their ego basically kind of dissolves, and then they are reborn again, and then learn everything anew, basically, you know? And so I can relate to that. You know, I can see how the Bitcoin is kind of creating that kind of spiritual awakening or challenging our ego identification. You know, so something similar to the Bitcoin, you know, rabbit hole experience or red pill experience, orange pill experience was something that I experienced, yeah, prior to meeting, discovering Bitcoin.
Yeah. And, When did you start making the connection between Bitcoin and the divine feminine as your latest article? Divine.
Well, the idea came one day, like I just had the kind of epiphany, the idea of, or the title of the article, you know, and the initial title was the Bitcoin, the return of the goddess, you know, that title just came to me. And then I just chuckled, you know, I laughed and told myself, wow, you know, that doesn't go well, you know, with Bitcoin maximalist. And, you know, if I write an article titled like that, you know, Divine Feminine or the Return of the Goddess, you know, who is going to read this, you know? So I laughed initially. And then, so you know, later on, like I tweaked a little bit to change the title and then, you know, to make it be more accessible, I guess. But the idea was that I started to recognize the imbalance of the masculine and the feminine qualities and in our society. And now the masculine principles, I guess, become more dominant. And when I use the term masculine and the feminine, I don't mean them relating to our physical or biological differences. But it's more like the polarizing energies that exist in universe. So it's more like the yin and the yang energies, or left brain, right brain, polarities, or the mind versus the heart, you know. So it's all about kind of a diametric, you know, two opposing principles that exist in nature and in the universe. So with that said, you know, just because you're a man, or just because someone is a woman, or I'm a woman, that doesn't mean that, you know, we only have, you know, masculine or feminine attribute. You know, we all have both elements. So it's, you know, when I say masculine and the feminine principles, it's helpful to understand them as the more kind of something that is more psychological and spiritual. But yeah, so basically what I realized is that what is characterized as the feminine principles or right brain functions, you know, has been suppressed for some reason in our society. And so now that, you know, with advanced technology and the focus given on the external reality, that somehow the modern men, you know, live in a left brain dominated state. And then I found that, you know, it's important for us to restore the balance between the two. And found Bitcoin actually is doing that. Bitcoin restores the feminine principles so that, you know, the left brain dominance would be kind of shifted, so that ego or the, the ego is actually understood to be located in the left brain, you know. So our identification, our conscious identity or identification is situated, you know, it's placed in the left brain part of ourselves. So, you know, when the balance is restored, the ego become minimized. So ego become more like servant, or, you know, doesn't take the, you know, ego is not a driver, basically, you know. Ego is steps down a little bit and would serve for the larger whole, so to speak, you know. So I found the how Bitcoin is doing that, you know, and then by doing so, it actually allow us to connect to this larger identity or spiritual identity, and help us to claim our own power.
Yeah, because the larger identity, as you say, or our soul or our intuition is then located in the right brain or in the heart.
Yes, in the heart, yes.
So when the left brain becomes softer, not so right, amplified, then the larger self have a chance to come out.
Yes, yes.
And how do you see Bitcoin helping with this process?
You know, I think the Bitcoin basically it's this, you know, uses the method of decentralization, and also it's restored, as I said in my article, it's restored the feminine principle of interconnectedness. And so what it does is the ego, basically ego is a rational part, you know, the masculine side of ourselves, or, you know, the ego's function is to make judgment, or they create polarities, you know, good and bad, right, wrong, you know, all of those kind of dualistic, you know, works with duality, you know, and the right brain or the feminine principles or the heart's function is to unite, you know, to unite what has been divided, I guess. Bitcoin basically embraces all that is human. I mean, all that is part of nature, you know, and attributes such as competition, you know, self-interest and altruism and collaboration, you know, we have different energies or different tendencies, I guess, within ourselves, right? We could be selfish, we could be kind at the same time, we could be, you know, collaborative, but we could be competitive. so this dichotomy or the paradox, right, that exists within ourselves has not been understood in our society. So that our society kind of create this dualistic system. And whereas I think Bitcoin embraces that paradox and you know, allow us to express everything, you know, without judging, without judgment. So then you find self-interest being manifested in Bitcoin system. And at the same time, you know, because the self-interest, the right to express our self-interest, the right to act out of self-interest are distributed across network equally, so that they don't become destructive, you know? It's not that, you know, somebody can act on self-interest more than the other, you know, so someone is oppressing the others to act, others to build for self-determination. You know, everybody can act equally, right? Exercise their right to self-interest equally. At the same time, I mean, paradoxically, enabling self-interest over everyone, it kind of creates a network that is collaborative at the same time, you know, that works for the whole, you know, work for the collective. And, you know, it does look like paradoxical, you know, but it's interestingly, through the method of decentralization, Bitcoin embraces paradox and, yeah, integrate, I guess, contradiction and create a elegant system, in my opinion, that make it possible for all that is human to flourish freely. And that, you know, through that, I think the system really integrates the both left and then right, you know, left side and right side of hemispheres, and synchronizing two different functions, I guess.
Yeah, so it has a similar function as the heart then.
Yes.
On an individual. And while the rational mind or left brain deals with beliefs or stories, narratives that are always subjective, so they can never be true, right? They are just projecting from a subjective source. So as long as people believe in this, they will always take sides against each other because it's in duality. But then when we sink into the heart, we can see all of these stories, and we can hold opposite stories in our heart, and we can say, oh, this is this, and this is the opposite. And it's not a conflict anymore. It's just a conflict as long as we stay within the realm of the left mind. Yeah. So it's like Bitcoin is like a huge heart for humanity. It's just embracing all these different.
Right. Yeah. So I see. I think of Bitcoin like like the heart, very intelligent heart, you know. And, you know, in our culture, we don't really recognize the heart having its own intelligence, you know. Somehow, you know, the heart has become a pump, right? And then it's like a mechanical pump. And then it's an erroneous view of the heart, in my opinion. And actually, heart is a sensing living organ. And it has its own intelligence. But I think that intelligence is not being recognized because of the fact that it's different, right? It works different than our logical mind. And our logical mind defines things and creates, it cannot hold paradox and the contradiction. It just divides the world, you know, defines and, you know, and a heart does the opposite kind of in some ways, right? The heart synchronizes, unifies and accept the contradiction and, so it's a different function. And I think that now, I think it's now time for our society to recognize the intelligence of the heart and then find a way for the intelligence of the mind to align itself and to be used in service to the heart intelligence, you know? So we need to have the left brain, obviously, you know, we need to have intellect, but we can now, you know, develop our intellect to the highest so that it can serve for the heart. You know, that's how I see it. And I think that Bitcoin is starting to do it. I think Bitcoin, you know, now with Bitcoin, we have this global heart, you know, that beats every 10 minutes. And it started to transform our society, to humanize the economy and awaken each of us and, you know, create a network that is based on a sense of brotherhood and sisterhood.
You say that this is sort of an automatic process now, that this is sort of the new path of humanity, that we will go towards a more heart-centered lifestyle.
Right.
Is it anything you have come across that would help to speed up this process?
if people
understand it rationally.
Like you say, yeah, but it's not an automatic process at all, actually. You know, it's just a, you know, Bitcoin provides a tool, but we have to do the work. You know, each of us have to do the work. Bitcoin, the proof of work, provide a coordination mechanism for people around the world to come together around this technology and then start working on ourselves, basically. And what that means is that we would engage in our shadow work and become aware of our own ego identification and start practicing the way of living through the heart, you know. And so that, you know, obviously takes certain practice, you know, it doesn't happen automatically.
What is happening automatically, though, is sometimes many Bitcoiners, when they start taking responsibility for their own keys, then they start taking responsibility for their health and then their mental health.
Yes,
and so it has this progression by just coming in contact with Bitcoin that we start looking more inwards.
Yes. I mean, I think Bitcoin kind of opened up a society to new potentials, I guess, or the values that have been suppressed in the fiat system. And one of which I think is that Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin rabbit hole phenomena, you know, I guess, and at all time, you know, Bitcoin's all time preference, I guess, allow us to go deep inside ourselves, you know, so that we can retreat from this busy lifestyle, you know, 9-to-5 jobs and being so much consumed by this whatever happening in the outside, you know, but out, you know, we can have time for ourselves and start to basically start the process of this inside out, you know, because our society, the things outside of us defines us, and we are not, you know, once we are born into this culture, we are subjected to this perception from the outside, you know, the force that tried to define us, right? So that, and then there is not even space for us to emerge from within, but with Bitcoin basically create a space for us to go deep inside so that external reality does not dictate us, you know, it's the what is inside would create external reality. So it's kind of the reverse, you know, engineering process, so to speak. And I think Bitcoin provides that space for each of us. And then this is a global experiment so that, you know, we find each other, and this is happening all over the place. So, you know, you realize that you are not the only one, you know, you're not alone in this, you know, we connect, and like you and I now connect, you know, through the internet, and we have never met each other, but we can connect and share ideas. And, you know, Bitcoin, it's kind of bringing people together, and it's creating a new global culture, right? And then we can go through this transformation process together. So, yeah, so it's, that's how I see it.
Yeah. I had a couple of episodes ago, I had Davdu on the show, and we talked about Power versus Force, the book, and the Consciousness Levels by David Hawkins. Yeah. And we talked about there that it's almost like the Bitcoin rabbit hole can almost be overlaid on top of the scale of consciousness. Yeah. Many people come in there down by greed. Mm-hmm. And then greed turns to pride, and then pride turns to, I don't remember now, they're all the different. And then, so it is,
right.
The Bitcoin rabbit hole is similar to a journey towards enlightenment. Have you thought about that?
Yes, definitely. I mean, that's how I see it too. And also, I think it's at a part of the process of waking up to who we really are. I think it requires us to confront our own darkness, you know, our own shadow. And shadow, I don't mean it's you know, or darkness. I don't mean anything to be negative. You know, I as Jung defines, the shadow is something that we just rejected from our consciousness, you know. So it contains something good as well, you know, greater part of ourselves as well. But the everything that we pushed out from our consciousness, right? So then the fiat system, you know, fiat system conditions us in a certain way. So then we operate with a dualistic mind, you know, with value judgment, and that we constantly spit out part of ourselves that we deemed to be, we consider to be negative or inferior, you know, and then project them out onto the things or the people or situations, you know.
And that's so also our power, right? So we push away part of ourselves, but that's also our strength we put away. So we become weaker and weaker in that scenario.
Right, and then we need to integrate aspect of ourselves that we basically denied, right? So the process, you know, I think Bitcoin rabbit hole experience kind of, you know, invite us to engage in this shadow war, you know? And for me, what that means is, you know, our world, the fiat world, is organized in a hierarchical way. And the people on the top, basically, they are the one who have power and then kind of oppresses, you know, the people who are on the bottom, right? And then so our world, I mean, we have created this world that there's things like the first world and then second world and then developing countries. And, you know, the nation state is based on hierarchy, right? Ranking of the countries and U.S. empire on the top or whatever, you know, and then other countries are placed below. So I think that Bitcoin is distributing power to the network. So and empowering people who are on the bottom. And for me also, you know, I grew up in Japan and, you know, in some ways that I had to do a lot of reclaiming my own power, you know, and that's part of my shadow work, is to reclaim my power and exercise my own rights. And then I think the Bitcoin adoption happening in El Salvador, for instance, is a good example. You know, people in El Salvador who have been kind of oppressed by IMF, and they can now take back their own power, right? And that's part of, you know, in some ways, part of their shadow work, that they are empowering themselves and, you know, look at the power that they kind of outsourced, you know, and to start to owning their own power, I guess.
Even though it's maybe was pushed on them without their... So it's two ways to do it. It's if people understand Bitcoin and they want to have Bitcoin, and the other way is more the fiat style, when you force a whole country to take. But in the end, they will understand Bitcoin even if they are forced. And since it's a positive force.
But I don't think that the people of El Salvador are forced to accept the Bitcoin. I mean, I think it's they are given choice not to accept them if they don't want to use Bitcoin. So, you know, media kind of, you know, I know the media coverage kind of says that you know, the Bitcoin was imposed on people, you know, again, and some citizens are against Bitcoin or whatever, you know, but I don't think it that these news articles actually cover the real story, I guess, you know. I don't think that they are imposed, you know, I think they are given choice, in my opinion. And it, most importantly, they are now certainly giving a choice to use Bitcoin, you know? So that's, yeah, I think, the most important thing, that, you know, they are given the opportunity to actually use Bitcoin, you know? That's significant.
So you talked about inside out living and comparing to outside in living. When in your journey did you understand that connection? I mean, because it's, we have the outside world, right? Where we can work, we can be really good. And then we have the inside world where we have, can have problems and things like this. And then it can be difficult for us to know, where should I put my focus? Should I put all of my focus on the external world and try to gain friends, money, and success? Or should I put some effort into my inner world? And like, where is the best return of investment?
I guess my own process of, I guess, healing myself, I guess, you know. And initially, obviously, there's suffering and pain, right? We experience suffering and pain. And I think one way or the other, we start with trying to solve issues in the outside, you know, trying to change things outside, you know. And then at some point, I think we realize changing what is outside doesn't really lead to the deep healing, you know, or it doesn't really address the root cause of it, I guess. And so I think my sincere, I guess, work in my engagement to heal myself, I guess, led me to, led me to see how the problems, I guess, or issues that I find exist within myself, you know. And it's easy, I guess, it's easy to kind of blame things outside of me, right? Like saying, okay, maybe this relationship doesn't work, or maybe this work, or maybe this person, or whatever, you know. But eventually you realize it's actually within me. And it's not just the things that were done in my lifetime, for instance, you know, but it's ancestral, you know, it's something that I don't even, you know, things that don't even belong to me, you know. It could be something that really affected my grandmother, you know. And as I kind of, you know, started to look into my ancestors' life and their unfinished business, so to speak, you know, I recognized how these, how their life is being repeated in me, you know. And so that kind of understanding, I guess, or the insight I got by working on myself.
So you could see the outside changing then? So you could see like proof of work, you can say that you do something inside and then the outside world changes.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it can take some time to understand this. And it's easy to keep trying in the external world over and over and over right. again. And it's not so much information about this either.
Right.
Not in the mainstream media.
Yeah, but I think it's a journey, you know. Each person has to go through his own journey, you know. And then there is a time. I mean, I think that everything works in the divine timing, in my opinion. And so that when healings to go deeper, you know, one has to be prepared, you know. If something, I mean, you know, if I wasn't ready, I guess, and if somebody were to come into my life and then tell me all about this, or, you know, trying to make me see how, you know, what is inside is manifested in the outside and all of that stuff. I mean, I was certainly not ready for it, ready to accept that information. And that information, if it's brought to me in the wrong time, it could cause damage, I think. So I think everybody goes through his or her own journey in a different way. And everything unfolding in the world is inherently perfect as it is, you know?
I think you mentioned in the article that Christian church was part of this divide of moving humanity away from divine feminine and moving into the rational mind.
Right. I mean, I think that the shift from the God, from goddess to God, the masculine God, And that was the shift from the, paganism, right? So at that time that there was this many gods, you know, the idea of many gods or the god lives in nature, you know, was replaced with this monotheism, this the single god, you know. And so that, I think that shift, you know, is you know, I think Christianity took a part in that shift. And I don't, but at the same time, I think that it was a necessary, what has happened was necessary, I think, you know, that this, the patriarchal system and the Christianity, the dominance of Christianity and the monotheism was necessary for us to develop the ego consciousness, you know, develop rationality, you know, the highly specialized part of, you know, to specialize our brain in a certain way. And monotheism was necessary for us to, you know, focus our attention basically, you know, because our consciousness have to shift from kind of like a, you know, consciousness of oneness, you know, that is not quite defined maybe, you know, more like in a state of right brain dominance maybe, to kind of more focused consciousness, you know. And if we don't have monotheism, if you know, our attention would go all over the place, so that we have to have that kind of monotheistic religion to keep our focus in you know, in one kind of place. So then we could develop science, we could develop technology, you know, we could develop, I mean, we can focus our consciousness and energy into, if you know what I mean, you know, into certain things, so that we can develop things in this physical plane. So that was a part of the necessary evolutionary process, in my opinion. And now we have attained, we have achieved the ego consciousness, you know, we have developed technology and medicine, and you know, and we are able to live comfortably in this material world. So then now we have to reconnect with what has been left behind, you know, which is the function of the right brain. So then what we are about to have is the integration of two hemispheres, right? The right and left, basically. And then divine, the masculine principles and the feminine principles, and then ego consciousness, you know, ego would be reconnected to its origin, you know? So, I mean, if I make sense, I mean, if I'm saying makes sense, does it make sense?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So you're basically saying that you see it more like a evolution of consciousness or evolution of the human species.
Right,
and
right.
Then in different periods, we need to maybe focus on developing certain aspects of the human body to be able to function properly.
Right.
And now we're in a time where we have overdone it maybe with the rational.
Yes.
So we need to balance it back to the to the intuitive.
Right. Yeah. So now I think that I see human beings are evolving, you know, evolving spiritually, and that our brain is, you know, evolving, and then we are developing consciousness, you know, awakening consciousness. And it's, you know, it's time for us to basically integrate, you know, two parts of the brains, and so that it could work in harmony, right? So that's kind of how I see it. Yeah.
So living from the heart, you say, and you say inside out. And what does this mean for you, like on a day-to-day basis? How does your workflow, how does, like, how you choose projects and so on differ from a completely irrational person?
Well, I mean, I used to be very, you know, left brain dominated. I mean, I was driven by goals and, you know, I was more like working with the left brain functioning, right? But now for me, I'm more like, I surrender. Surrender is maybe the word. I surrender my will to something that knows me more than I do, you know? And so that I don't necessarily, I mean, I don't have goals or like, you know, it's a different existence. I allow things to happen, I guess, you know? So like, I don't make decisions based on the left side of my brain. I mean, obviously, there are certain practical things, you know what I mean? Like, I of course, use my ego discernment, you know, and left brain to calculate or analyze, or, you know, to deal with the everyday kind of practical things. But the important decisions of my life, obviously, I would listen to, you know, my intuition, perhaps, you know, or the heart intelligence, you know, and what it's guided me to do, instead of, like, you know, doing, you know, always like trying to just keep doing things, you know. I'm more like I'm more deep. Trying to live in a state of being, I guess. So, you know, of course, I engage in actions, you know, I do things, but it's more coming from a peaceful place. Yeah.
So do you believe in like a deeper purpose, like that?
Yes,
you,
yes.
That, right. You have like a soul, and yes. That you have some things to do here that could, yes, help humanity, yes, in the evolution. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that way too?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Actually, I agree. I agree with I think 99% of what you said here today.
Oh, okay. That's good. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of a confirmation, isn't it? Right. It's the resonance, I guess.
Yeah. So it's living inside out. It took me quite some time to figure it out, even, mm-hmm, though I was very aware of my inner world. It seemed very chaotic, and I took a while to understand that which, yeah, one is the mirror and which one is the source. Well, right. And
yeah, it's like the, you know, kind of like I literally, like, you lose your mind. I mean, that's like, you know, you have to ask yourself, like, am I going crazy, right? I mean, and then you know, people who walk the path, you know, I was fortunate enough to have people who kind of show me the way, I guess, you know, help me along the way and confirmed me that, okay, I'm not losing my mind, you know. It's a process, I guess, you know.
I was leading a men's group here a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. And there it was, you know, I had 9 Bitcoiners, and they were really dedicated to what your article is about. They really wanted to shift from a rational lifestyle to a more heart-centered lifestyle. And so that was sort of the topic. Wow. So your article really came in a good timing.
I'm glad to hear that.
It's like, it feels right to do this switch from outside to inside. And
right.
But when more people write articles like this, it's like, yes, let's do it. Like, the humanity is now moving into something new.
Right, definitely, yes.
So what do you think is on the horizon? If you take a stab at some predictions, like, how different do you think the world will be in 4, 5, 10 years?
I don't know about the 4, 5, 10 years. I mean, but I see fundamentally, I mean, as I said earlier, humanity is evolving, you know, and we are on the verge of next stage of our evolution. And I think that enough of us, I think, you know, do the work, embody our awakening and what it means to be human through a network effect. You know, it could kind of amplify this. Our creative power gets amplified, and then I think we can truly realize our full potential as human species. So whatever we hope, I think that, you know, Bitcoiners are notorious for, you know, famous for relentless optimism. So I think that, you know, we can imagine a better world, and that our imagination is really the limit, you know, the sky is the limit, I guess. So I'm very, very optimistic about our future. And because of fellow Bitcoiners, that, you know, I'm not the only one, you know, there are many, 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 you know, Bitcoiners who wake up to their own full potential and start to, you know, live their life fully. And So I think, you know, it depends on how our future entails. Really depend on our ability to imagine, you know, what we imagine or what we want to have, you know, what we value and what we are capable of doing. It's just a matter of showing the world what we are capable of doing as a network, as a global network, I guess. So yeah, so I can't quite say concretely how the world looks like in the, you know, next maybe 4, 5, 10 years, but I think that it would be brighter future, you know, it'd be a future that human beings to become more proud of, you know, can become proud of ourselves, I guess, you know. So I'm very hopeful. And
me too.
It's
really this with fear, right? We're trying to pull humanity out of fear and fear-based behaviors.
Yes.
And you know, one possibility is like the next bull run, for example. Mm-hmm. It could be that maybe it's really time for this super cycle, let us say, because if we reach this momentum now, that, you know, the hodlers are just getting more and more, everyone is getting on board, and we have new Bitcoiners coming in every day, but that become maximalists. I mean, and then we also have the country adoption, right? With the different regions of countries and countries.
Right.
And so the volume is starting to grow there, the volume of humans, the volume of money.
Right.
And so when it starts going up and it just keeps going and keeps going and keeps going, and people, countries come in, and maybe after a few months of just keep going or a year of keep going, then it just becomes the new normal. Okay, it will go up forever. And then and what happens then is that we could maybe be able to pull people really out of fear, because if the value of Bitcoin will just keep going up for a few years at least, then people don't have to work, so they don't need to do things out of survival, out of fear, and instead they can just do whatever. And that's when they start the process of getting to know themselves, right?
Yes. And then I think abundance, I think, you know, Bitcoin provides abundance, and abundance really changes us, you know, like that we become more generous, right? Kind, and appreciate other people, you know, and spend time, I mean, start to value things that are more spiritual and psychological. What I find is that Bitcoin is doing is that it's, Bitcoin really raises our consciousness. That's what's happening, in my opinion. And then making us be a better person, you know.
What's happening on an energy level, like in my energy body, like every time I go meditate, it's this upgrading process. You know, it's like old patterns, old fear, shame, guilt, or stuff like this.
Yes.
They just fall off. And then I go into a stronger, healthier state. That's just a normal meditation, right? And if then this Bitcoin will go up like this, that's the kind of thing that will happen to everyone as, as soon as they stop worrying about getting food or stuff like this. So then everyone will start upgrading in an energetic sense. Do you can see this?
Yes, definitely. I mean, you know, I've written an article elaborating how Bitcoin is a consciousness enhancing tool, you know, enhancing technology. And then, you know, if we compare Bitcoin with the fiat money basically drag us down, you know, into a lower state, and that keeps us kind of be addicted to consuming things, or addicted to, you know, literally like addictive substance, like, you know, alcohol or, you know, workaholism, you know, because it depletes our energy, and it constantly, you know, we have to kind of get things from outside, you know, fiat traps us in this paradigm of the external world defines us, you know, that's the paradigm that that system operates with. So then we kind of feel like constantly need to get energies from the outside, whether that is by purchasing things, you know, shopping or working hard and acquiring money or object, you know. And that you know, it actually cut us off from the real source of energy, you know? So Bitcoin basically provide us, I mean, free us, right? Free us from that fiat, this addictive cycle of the fiat system, so that we could go in inwardly and then find our own node, so to speak, you know, that connect with the real source of energies. Then, you know, when we get energies from our source, I mean, it's abundant, you know, it's constantly, you know, fed with energies, you know, and then we don't have to extract, you know, from other things, like, you know, or seek energies from the outside. So that, you know, basically is a help us to attain kind of a optimal health and well, basically create well, promote well-being. So energetically speaking, I mean, Bitcoin is superior in this regard, you know, because Bitcoin connects each person with the source of energy directly. So we don't have to depend on third parties, you know, try to get things from the outside. Yeah.
Yeah. And if we look at this inside out, which Bitcoin is then bringing us to, it's like, it's if we are poor, it's because we have a program that's dictating to us that we are poor, right? So it's like a program in our energy body. And then as long as we have this program, we will be poor. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's important to work on ourselves and to drop and release old programs. Exactly. So when this happens then on a mass scale, this means that poverty will be erased, right? Because we will not even have those programs available to us because it's such low frequency that they will not exist.
Right. We can't, you know, when we are in the program, you know, run by the program, we cannot even see them, right? See them running, you know, we are in it. We are swimming through it, you know, and once we become aware of these programmings, then we can break them. We can start to dismantle these programmings and then install a new one, you know? So yeah, I mean, I think the fiat system run with this programming of lack and fear-based programming, right? Survival fear-based programming. So it makes us be constantly kind of feel lacking something and feel anxiety, make us feel anxiety and, you know, in a perpetual state of hopelessness, I guess, and you know.
Yeah, mass media is sort of, if you see it from frequency level, the mass media is just pumping out fear.
Yes. Mass media is a large part of the fiat system, right? I mean, and education, you know, indoctrination, programming, you know, all of that stuff, and then Hollywood movies and everything. Everything is just programming, and it makes us to act in a way that is so limiting, right? And then we internalize these programmings and then start to identify ourselves with the storylines, the narratives that the, you know, media give us. And then we don't realize that how the base energy, right, that the underlying energy of those narratives are the one actually keep us down, you know, and that until we become aware of them, we cannot really change things, you know.
Imagine the flip when we take over media, like when Bitcoiners take over mass media and they start pumping out positive things. They start pumping out like
possibilities. Exactly, right. Because it's just a and then also, you know, what I found is that how the, you know, fiat system created this attention culture, right? So then made us be addicted to attention from the outside, whether that is social media or, you know, the news or whatever, you know, it kind of directed our attention in a certain direction. And then we actually losing our energies, right? Because we are now conscious of where we are paying attention to, right? And then the news would just focus on, destructive things, you know, or the fear-based stories, right? And then we are giving our attention to these events. And then at the same time, we are increasing basically the probabilities of these type of, you know, fear-based events to happen again, right? Because we are not using our energy in a constructive way. We are not using our energies to create, you know, a better reality. I like your idea, you know, once the media is transformed, that the media start to talk about positive things, you know, the things that happen in our community that are positive, you know, uplifting, you know, then our attention is shifted, then we can start thinking more kind of bright future, right? And the consciousness shift, our energy level shift, you know. And I think Bitcoin is kind of helping us to become aware of how we use our energy, you know, where we put our attention to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same thing for us, where we put our attention in our personal process. Mm-hmm. And then it's just when this comes to a certain breaking point, when this starts happening on a humanity mm-hmm. level.
Right.
Like you said before, it's more and more of us going in this path now, breaking out of the outside in and starting to go inside out.
Right.
And then maybe it's one certain point when it's just enough humans doing this, so it can flip on a global scale.
Yes. I mean, so, you know, the story of the 100 monkeys theory.
Yeah, this was a little bit what I was sort of referring to. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, so once the, you know, the 100th monkey learned how to wash sweet potatoes, right, before they eat. And then that new behavior spread through the entire species, right? So, I mean, I think that's happening with Bitcoin. I feel like Bitcoiners kind of, you know, once Bitcoiners awaken and embody new way of being, that would eventually, like, that would spread through network effect, and then that would become a norm, you know?
Yeah, but then we have, if we look at the Bitcoin community, it's still 90% of Bitcoiners are still living outside in, even though they are aligning with better morals, values, they are taking care of their bodies better and so on. But it's still some way to go also for Bitcoiners, or what do you think?
I don't know. I think that, you know, this outside, I mean, the inside out thing, you know, I mean, it would take a different form for different people. Somebody might be living that way, but they might not talk about it. You know what I mean? So I'm not sure, you know, if it's true that the majority of Bitcoiners are still living, you know, from the outside in, things that you talk about. I mean, I my guess is that there are many who are actually living from the inside out, but they don't, you know, they don't talk about them, this process, or it might look different for that person. Does it make sense?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it's just, yeah. As long as people act on beliefs, like you said, if they have goals, uh-huh. you know, this means that they identify with their thoughts, this means that they're living outside in. So it's as long as people live a linear life, planning for the future, then they haven't surrendered.
I don't think that everybody is different, and everybody has, you know, his or her own journey. So I don't think that, you know, I don't necessarily say that everybody have to surrender, or everybody have to live in a way that is not driven by the left side of the brain. I mean, I don't say that. I think that everybody should do, you know, whatever he or she is called to do. And that's just perfect, you know, and there isn't any kind of one particular path, you know, that everybody have to take, if you know what I mean, you know. And the Bitcoin rabbit hole experience is different for each person, you know. What that means is different for each person. And then, you know, what I'm saying about this, the inside out, you know, way of living, or heart-based living, I mean, it's not for everyone. I think that it's again, you know, for me, I find it to be rewarding experience, and it was something that I chose, you know, the but some people don't find it to be rewarding, or you know, or some people are not drawn to that kind of things, and it's okay, you know.
Thank you so much for coming on to this show and talking about your life and your article.
Oh, thank you for having me.